This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
All right, we'll go ahead and get started. And I think we'll just start with a word of prayer. Let's bow our heads. God, I thank you for bringing us together here today. It's been a big week for all of us, and I think we can all say it's been a good week. I'm sure that you've spoken to all of us in some very personal ways. And Lord, I pray that as things wrap up today, that the things that you have taught us, have shown us, will go deep in our heart. Some of them we will remember consciously and think about them. Others, I'm convinced, will become a subconscious part of our experience of walking with you and walking in our classrooms. And this morning, God, I want to commit myself to you and each one of us that are here to letting you speak to us about maybe one of the more difficult things of teaching, dealing with problems and difficulties, just getting things across. Help us to learn what we can here, and most of all, learn to go to you with these kind of problems, because you really know about all of them. You're involved in all of them. And Lord, help us to keep in touch with you. In Jesus' name, amen. I'll introduce myself this way first, then give you a few things up there. This is my first year ever teaching at Faith Builders, and I won't talk to you about all the things that went through my mind for the last several months about this. And yeah. Also, this particular class, even though I have myself to blame for having it to talk about, has been a real bear in a lot of ways. Last year, I put it on the back of the evaluation sheet. They wanted a list of things that, you know, I'd like to hear people talk about. And I think it said, and I remember maybe some that I would even feel capable to talk about. And this one was just one that sort of popped in my head. I put it down because teachers deal with this all the time, learning problems. And I knew they had wanted me to talk, but I just kind of forgot about it. And then dear brother Lyle Musser sent me an email and wondered if I would talk. And so, well, I guess God wants me to. He's been after me about this through various people. So I said, sure. And then he sent me these two of them, one teaching a book of the Bible. That one I'm okay with. And this one. And I started thinking about this. And if I don't know how many of you are sitting in Howard Lichty's class, but the first morning he got up here and said, did you ever do anything that afterwards you just felt like you weren't able to do or agree to do something? And I definitely felt that way about this one. And I did gather a lot of stuff together, not so much research, but just a lot of things that go through my mind about this whole thing. And I'm not sure what's going to happen today. I am promising you that I'm kind of leaving this class up to you, and if you pick it up and go with it, I think you'll learn a lot from it. If not, I have enough of stuff here that I think I can sort of boggle you with. After I got done writing my outline, I sort of pictured a 55-gallon drum and picking it up and dousing you all with it and thinking, okay, they can go home and dry off or something, because that's kind of how I felt. So that's one thing I'll tell you about. Then the other thing I'll tell you is, if I wince up here, it's probably not about the class and about you. The other evening when I was playing softball, I plowed into my huge co-teacher. And now I sort of feel like Adam did after he got his first wife, maybe. I'm not sure. So it hurts to laugh. It's not really pain all the time, but if I move wrong, it's like that. So I may have to go home and just see what happened. I don't know if I can really do a lot about it. your workshop speaker. If you're in my Bible book class, you got one introduction. Here's another one. You see the footer? There's my name, Conrad Tullenberger. I've diagnosed myself with acute DIYS. And accompanied by DBOD and PABD. The second one there, PABD, has mutations, lots of them. Two of them are PDCD and INID. I'm sure you've heard of ADHD, and I'm not sure, there's OCD, and there's a whole bunch of these things. But this is your speaker's self-diagnosis of himself. These conditions actually are not clinically established. Maybe someday they will be if they need these letters. But they are sometimes real obstacles to my progress and learning. I would ask you to guess what they are, but I'll save you that. Whoops. First one is do-it-yourself syndrome. I am a do-it-yourselfer. And I have decided it is a syndrome. It has gotten me into trouble various times. The accompanying condition that often goes along with this is a don't bother others disorder. Okay? And so that's one of the reasons why I'll do it myself, because I don't want to bother other people. And that is a disorder, by the way, just in case you're wondering. And the other thing that goes along with this is people are busy disposition. Some of that is because I know I'm busy, so I assume, I project that onto a lot of other people and just assume, well, they're busy. So if I bother them, that means, you know, they have to quit what they're doing to help me. And that's a disorder. We're all busy. My students are always busy. Not with what I give them to do, but they are busy. So they come to school and say, well, I didn't have time. The mutations of that second one, as people are busy disposition, has some other forms that are a little bit more sinister. Sometimes I can think, well, people just don't care. Well, this is my project. What do they care about it? And that's a kind of a sad disposition, especially if you're a school teacher. How many people don't care? Some of them, a group of them, sit there and look at you every day. And if you sort of get that attitude about them, it's not really good. And the other one is, it's not important, or it's not that important to really get someone else involved. By the way, this is a self-diagnosis. I did it myself. I just want you to catch that. These are learning speed bumps in my life. Okay? They slow me down sometimes. If you try to do everything yourself, do you realize that there is not enough hours in a day? There just isn't. There's not even enough of minutes in an hour. There's not enough of seconds in a minute. Things just, you just run out of time. So they become things that slow me down in learning, okay, and getting stuff done too. But a lot of these things do have positive possibilities. If you really want somebody, if I want to ask a person to do something for me and expect them to get it done, if I pick a do-it-yourselfer, they'll probably get it done, okay, all by themselves. Maybe it'll take longer than it would have to. But do-it-yourselfers, they learn a lot of things just by virtue of having to do it themselves. So there are some positive things with it. And I would like you to think about yourself a little bit. Maybe do a little self-assessment. We'll get to that a little bit later, but I'll just cue you in to be thinking about that. And this is my grandson. I told you that I was an amateur grandpa. My daughter did send me a picture. She actually sent me three of them. I think this one's my favorite. Did you ever hear about the three monkeys? That hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. He's got them all down before he's a month old. See that? I think that's a real promising picture there. And I'll give you a claimer, not a disclaimer. What you see and hear in this workshop from the speaker is just that. What I have to say today comes from my own journey in relating to myself, to my God, and to the people He has put around me. It's not a lot of research. I was recently influenced by Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence. I read over the past few months. There's not a lot in here about that, but I do know that what I read in that book, even though I don't always agree with his perspective on life, I found to be very true, very real in my own experience and in the experience of my students and children. Also, I've been deeply influenced by the Bible and God's Spirit. Any quotations that you come across in here of the Bible will be the authorized version, commonly known as the King James Version, unless stated otherwise. What is true in this workshop, you will find to be God's and eternal. What is false, you'll find to be mine, misleading and irrelevant. And I want you to feel free to go away from here just evaluating what has happened in this workshop, because I'm not perfect, and some of the things that happen to me in life I do not interpret perfectly. And what you carry away from here, feel free to tell them this is what Conrad Sullenberger said, and then they know that it's not gospel. It's just from that person. But I do believe with all my heart that together here, as we talk about things, God does have things for us to say. I know He has told me things, and there are some things in here that I know are true, that I believe with all my heart are true, and I expect them to be true long after I die and long after Jesus comes back, because truth is eternal. I believe learning is relational. Therefore, learning obstacles indicate relationship obstacles. I believe that with all my heart, just because of my own learning difficulties, most of them, if not all of them, if I would know everything, were connected to some kind of a relationship problem. And when I say relationship, I don't want you just to think about people. That's not the only thing you relate to in life. You are having a relationship with your chair right now. Okay? There are some chairs you do not like to sit in. Is this true? Mm-hmm. Like when you go to your house, you probably have a favorite chair. There are actually chairs in school that students don't like to sit in. Okay? It may be all of them, but I'm sure there are some that are worse than others. We have two kinds of desks in our high school, and I have preference to which one, and I know my students do too. Okay? And in my room, since we're 11 and 12, we get the ones that we think are the best. I should say that I think are the best. Learning is relational. If there is a relationship problem, learning will be affected, probably mostly negatively. I also to believe that to divorce learning from relationships is to destroy the joy and life of education. If I assume that I do not need a relationship with my students to teach them, it's going to go rough. I might get things across. I'll tell them a lot of things, a lot of facts, and they may even learn some things, but the joy and the life will be out of it, and I won't even be guaranteed that they learn something. Relationships are very important when it comes to learning, and what I say in this workshop is going to be based on that belief that I have. The objectives of this class I put down like this. I don't know if we'll get them all covered. Hopefully, in some degree or another, we at least touch on them. But it's to consider various things about human nature that create learning development challenges. And I'm going to use the word challenges a lot here because even though I know we're talking about obstacles, I like the positive feel that the word challenge has. When you're facing a student that has some kind of a learning problem, put it in your mind that this is a challenge that we, the two of us, are going to overcome, rather than an obstacle that we're always going to be running up against. The obstacle actually, and sometimes may never go away, but the two of you hopefully can make some progress in learning how that can be handled. Just like I said at the beginning, some speed bumps we have in learning actually have a positive side to them. And if it's something about a person that can't change, they have to learn to live with it. They have to learn to overcome it, be winners with it, and find the positive part of it. Hopefully we can learn to identify some of these challenges. Maybe you can go home and give them letters. There's all kinds of things out there, and the medical world has only begun to come up with the acronyms for these things. Hopefully we can discuss some ways to effectively help a child win these challenges, these obstacles that they face, and to give the teacher perspective and encouragement in working with these challenges. Like I said in my prayer, this is probably some of the most difficult part of teaching. Grading papers is just horrible and boring. But if that was the worst thing I had to deal with in teaching, I would think teaching was like almost like going to heaven. Just take the papers out and it would be. But trying to deal with a child that is not learning and trying to figure out why, that takes a lot of energy. And I'll say this here, the challenges that I want to talk about today, or at least that I prepare to talk about today, are the obstacles that are inside the child. I'm not here to talk about the externals. There's a lot of those, and in some ways, you may be one of those. I'm that in mind sometimes. Your classroom might be one of those external obstacles to learning. Their home life, their friends. And I'm not really here to talk about that, but if that's where this goes, I'm okay with that. But most of the time, even in those particular things, the solution that you can work with, or I should say the child can work with, is them. You can't change some of those things. You can change yourself if that's one of them. You can change your classroom if that's one of them. But you probably cannot change a child's friends. You can't change their parents. You can't change the house they live in. You can't change the church they go to. You can't change the clothes they wear. All of those things you can't do anything about. But you can help your child, give them the tools to learn to deal with those things. And so, like I said, I'm not really prepared to talk about that a lot, but we can talk about some of those things along the way. And if I was going to give this a goal, this workshop a goal, it is to tune you in, or let God tune us all in, to the internal obstacles that keep our students from learning like they can. Challenges to obstacle learning. I'm going to give you a few definitions that were just helpful to me to look at. A challenge is a contest. That's why I like that word better than obstacles. Obstacle is anything that gets in the way. But the way we handle that should become a challenge. If my student has an obstacle to learning, I take that as a challenge to help them to learn how to handle that and make progress. And it will require special effort. You won't be able to just say, well, let's try a few things. It's going to take some energy, some concentration, some focus. You'll have to think about it, pray about it. You'll have to maybe build a relationship with that student. It's going to take some work and special effort. Learning as opposed to educating. This one I found interesting. I really never really thought about this way. Learning is just to acquire knowledge. Acquiring knowledge, skill, character, by study and experience. To educate has to get all of those things by formal schooling. And if you just want my own personal opinion, which is one of the things about myself that may actually be an obstacle to my students learning, is there are many times I feel the way we educate our children almost has become an obstacle. I feel that many days in my classroom. Why are we doing it this way? Just putting them in this room for this many hours a day, that's just hardly normal. I mean, here I am stuck in this room for all these hours, day in and day out. To me, sometimes I feel like that just becomes a problem. Human fundamentals. I'm going to give you a few of these, just give some more background, and then I'm going to open it up to you and see if you want to take this class from here. If not, I will pour it on. We are created in God's image. You all know that. I have some references here. I'm not going to take the time to look them up. But that has become a very special fact about human beings to me. We are created in God's image. I don't even understand what all that means, but I love to ponder that. And I love for God to show me what that means. And the one thing that I'll leave with you is that means that while you are walking around on this earth before everyone else, but today I especially want you to think about your students, you are a display of who God is. I want you to think about that. I want you to ponder that. I want you to let that soak into you. It's a sobering thing to me. I'm not talking about solemn kind of sober. I'm talking about reality. God wants me to display to my students who He is. And Melvin's been talking a lot about authority. And in my mind, those two things are together. You will have authority if you fill the role God gave you in this life to be His image. It's a lifelong process. God knows what we're made of because He did it. Okay? You can go back there at the beginning. He made you out of mud. I'm the same. That little thing about what boys and girls are made of, I don't know where they came up with that girl one, but the boy one I think is real. Okay? Sticks and stones and mud and puppy dog tails and all that kind of stuff. We are made of dirt. And God knows that. And He still gave us His image. It's profound. And there's another reference you could look at. God was and still is intensely purposeful in creating each one of us. And the reference I have for that, again, if I felt like I had time, I'd love to read that to you. but Psalm 139 is it's a precious psalm for me, just about that whole thing. Those verses in there, the one familiar one, "We are fearfully and wonderfully made, marvelous are thy works." Actually, I think I will take the time to pull this up because I think I have this one in another version that I would just love to read to you. This is out of the Common English Bible. It goes like this. "You are the one who created my innermost parts. You knit me together." I just love that picture. "While I was still in my mother's womb, I give thanks to you that I was marvelously set apart." In Genesis, when it records that God made man, and it says He breathed into his nostrils a breath of life, and man became a living soul, there is no other thing on earth that has that privilege. That sets us apart in a very specific way. And that's how I like to think of the word sanctified. When we become God's children, Christians as we call it, it's like that happens all over again. The fall messed a lot of that up, but that is what we're all about. And you should thank Him every day that you are set apart from your pet cat and your pet dog and all these other wonderful animals you go to the zoo to see. You are very different. Okay? You are very special. "Your works are wonderful. I know that very well. My bones weren't hidden from you when I was being put together in a secret place, when I was being woven together in the deep parts of the earth." I don't know what that means. that feels like it means more than just in your mother's womb. Your eyes saw my embryo, and on your scroll, and this is a part of this translation I really like, every day was written that was being formed for me. I just love the thought that while God was putting me together in my mother's womb, or even whatever was happening before that, I was being put together with every day of my life in mind. God had that all in the picture when he was making me. And I have chosen to believe with all my heart that the way God made me was designed to fit every day I live. That's just profound to me. And so when I stand in front of my students or wherever I am, I can believe that I was made for this moment. Mordecai understood that when he told Esther, "You were brought into the kingdom for such a time as this." And it was before any of those days had happened. It was all in place. "God, your plans are incomprehensible to me. Their total number is countless. All the things God has planned for me, I couldn't even begin to count them. If I tried to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. If I came to the very end, if I actually did manage to get them all counted and came to the end, you'd still be there." It's like, that really isn't the end of that. God is very specifically interested in who we are because he made us. God is intensely concerned and active about what becomes of us. Jeremiah 29:11. "I know the plans that I have for you, says the Lord. Plans," I forget the exact words, "but plans for good and not for evil, to give you an expected end." And again, you can look in a few other translations, and there's some very nice ways we can think of that. But God has in mind to give us an end that is hopeful, that is fulfilling. That's what he wants for us. Remember that about yourself. Remember that about each of your students. And I will also give you just a quick diagram here of a picture that I was showed lots of times when I was in school. And since then, my good friend John D. Martin used to show this a lot. He doesn't very much anymore. And it's only one way to do it. But this might help put some things together depending on where we go. But a human being has some basic parts. One of them is your body. Okay, just the physical flesh and blood and bones that you have. And then we have a soul that I almost think three words is very incapable of wrapping it up, but it does say a lot about us. We have a mind distinct from your brain. I specifically want to mention that. Your brain, your mind, I really don't believe are the same thing. A will and emotions. Emotions probably being the one that displays itself the most. And then we have a spirit. And I really don't know how to describe that. It's just that inside of us that is, I don't know, sometimes I like to think about it as a battery. It's a thing in us that gives us life and power. And we may refer to some of these things as we go along. But now from you, how many of you would like to share some of the learning obstacles that you have faced about yourself? If we do that, I think that'll help us look at some of the things our students face. And maybe not all of us have things that we just remember, but I'm sure some of us have learning obstacles that we remember that have become a part of who we are. I had the very first teacher I remember. I do not remember a thing she taught me. And there's probably quite a few teachers that way, and I'm not blaming her, but there was an incident that happened that forever marked her in my mind. And all I remember is her last name was Edsel. We might have just called her Miss Edsel, I don't know. I think she was a good teacher. But she had, as I remember, I was really young, so it gets a little foggy, but I know what happened, so I put a few things together. She had a rule that you were not to drop books. That was a good rule. You want to take care of your books. But I discovered it was the law of the Medes and the Persians, that gravity was to have no effect on books. Because I still don't know exactly how it happened, but some books fell off my desk. I don't know if I bumped them or whatever. And I discovered that wasn't even to happen. And I don't know all her methods of discipline, but the one that she used was to give people a paddling with a fly swatter. Isn't that dignifying? You can't expect it to hurt hardly. I'm talking about the floppy kind. So that whole situation frustrated me very much. We went in, it was at the church basement, and so we went into a little Sunday school room, and she did her thing, and I really don't know if this is true, but this is how I picture it today. After it was over, I got under something. I don't know if it was a table or whatever. I was probably only 7 or 8 at the time. That's the only thing I remember about that teacher. Okay. Had her for a whole year. But that whole thing created something in my experience that I'm sure if I faced another teacher that reminded me of her, at least until I was old enough to deal with things, I probably wouldn't learn anything. Like, whoa, what's going to happen from this one? Okay. Because I'm sure after that, the rest of my year was spent wondering what's going to go wrong next. What am I going to do wrong next that maybe I can't help? Fortunately, the next teacher I had, again, was a lady teacher, and I remember her whole name. Her whole name was Joan Elliott. And for my elementary years, she was probably my favorite teacher. And again, I don't know exactly all the things she taught me, but I do know that school, I enjoyed going to school. Because she was a nice teacher. She seemed to understand us, feel with us, and connect. Okay. I do remember this about her, though. We moved away from the community, and I think I was a teen when I found out that she had married and got a divorce. And that, for whatever reason, I think it was because of what she had established in my life. God might have used her to heal some of the Edsel things that happened. That was a big disappointment. But that didn't really change how I felt about her as a teacher. That stuck. So maybe you've had experiences or things in school that were just struggles for you to learn. And I'd like if you would feel free to share some of those. This is your opportunity to take over the class, by the way. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And those kind of things, if we do that, we can create something in the child that becomes an obstacle later. You know, the next time they have to look at a book and figure it out themselves, all they can think about is this frustrating experience that they had before. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Maybe this next one will be a little bit easier. What are some learning challenges or obstacles that you expect to face this year, especially with your students that you anticipate is going to be a frustration getting them to learn? Maybe I should do this. How many of you, this is going to be your first year teaching? Okay, just a few. How many of you have taught at least 3 years? Okay, how many of you have taught more than 10? Okay, just a few. All right. If you've taught 10 years, you do learn to anticipate things. You see these students coming up. You hear other teachers talk about them, or you had them last year and you say, yeah, this is what's going to happen this year. I'm facing a group of boys this next year that I won't call myself very concerned, but I see a lot of challenges. I see a lot of challenges. Is there anyone that has something you'd like to share? Maybe I'll talk about my group of boys a little bit. I teach 11 and 12, so last year they were in 11th grade, and it's the first year I had them. They do have like a history that teachers can tell you about them. They are not a bad group of boys. They're not really known to get in really any serious trouble. They are also not known to get into any really serious study. They're an interesting bunch. Probably the class average is the highest class average ability that I've ever had teaching school. Score for guys. But trying to get them to use those smarts for school, it's like pushing a wheelbarrow with a flat tire. Okay? The more you give them to do, the more the tire squashes. So finally you can take it all out and then the thing bounces around like a happy thing, but it's just crazy. Like I said, they're not bad. They actually don't have that bad of an attitude. Maybe they just don't have one. Last year, when they came into my room, of course, I knew all this a little bit, and I decided I'm going to make my theme in that room responsibility. I didn't really want to aggravate them, and so I didn't push it real hard, but I just made sure that was a theme. I actually had put up a bulletin board just that said responsibility. I gave talks the first couple weeks of school. Matter of fact, the whole quarter, every week, I'd give a talk about responsibility. First thing I had to put on the bulletin board was I told the classes, I want you to write a little paper about what you think responsibility is. And I plastered them all over the board. They had to do one every week, I think, and just filled this thing up with what they thought about responsibility. Did two things. It helped them think about responsibility. It told me what they thought about responsibility. Okay? It was kind of revealing. They had some good ideas, but none of them went real deep. And the ones that did, I could tell they just knew about it. Okay? So this year, and I spent a year with them. They're a wonderful group of boys, five of them. They're going to be seniors. And so this year, obviously, that whole thing of just not taking responsibility is an obstacle. And you see if you can tell me this. Why does a person not take responsibility? Maybe you have to think about yourself a little bit. This is sort of how I figure some of these things out. I think about myself. So what is it? What's the deal the times I don't take responsibility? Uncertainty. Not sure of the situation. Okay. Right? That can be one reason. I want to go deeper, but that's an obvious one. If I start feeling like, oh, I'm not sure what's going on. But that one won't stop me. I'll try to figure it out if I'm really going to be responsible. But it'll be a thing I have to work through. And if I stop there, then obviously I'm not taking responsibility. But why would I even stop there? Okay. They've never had to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. Think about relationships. Remember I said learning and relationships are two things that go together. Why do you keep teaching?
I still have a vision for it. I still think it's important.
Do you feel responsible to the vision? I'm glad for that. Why have those people never had to take responsibility? By the way, I do this to my students all the time. Now you probably wonder what these seniors have to put up with. They don't want to think, and I keep trying to make them think.
Is it possible that those in authority didn't see it as important?
Okay. Authority is a good word. I'm going to leave that one out right now. But they have never felt responsible to someone to get it done. If I can interpret what you told me, I feel the same way about teaching. I feel called to teach. And I feel a responsibility to teach because I feel responsible to the person that gave me that call. He provides me with the vision to give me inspiration and incentive. But when things get bad and I don't have a vision, like Gerald was saying this morning, what do I do next? I don't quit because I feel responsible to the person that gave me that call. And I expect, I trust that he is going to do something in my life and in the life of the people that he has called me to teach. So responsibility at its root, again, is a relationship problem. What I feel like I want to try to do with my five seniors this next year is to develop a relationship with them that if they do not do what I want them to do in school, they feel like they have violated something that is valuable to them. I think that is so important. Then whatever other problems they have with this whole thing of responsibility, they'll know how to deal with. And then I will feel like they are learning. Right now, yeah, they're learning. But it's so frustrating every time I give them a test. And all the stuff on that test is stuff we've talked about in class. Stuff that I was interested in. I was enthused about. Stuff that I felt was important. Stuff that I felt like I pounded into them, wrote it on the board, made them write it on their paper, and then made them write it on their paper again in another way. And they're supposed to be getting this stuff. And they go to the test and they write down this answer. It seems like they had a funny way of figuring out how they could write something down that it was sort of there, but I know they did not learn what I wanted them to learn. They learned the words to put down, and so I'm fair. I'll give them credit if it was the right thing, but I do not feel really good about it. I feel like these guys are going through school, and they're going to leave school, and they're going to forget all that stuff because they never really learned it. So I'm still not exactly sure how I'm going to deal with them this year. I actually made a deal with them this past summer that something that I said, I'll make this deal with you, but I'm not pushing you. It's all up to you. And if you follow through with this, I'm going to make it part of your graduation gift. So it's theirs, right? It's their loss. And they've done a little bit with it, but I have the very same feeling. It's like, yeah, maybe I didn't quite have that kind of relationship with them that really was going to go that far. But I wanted them to feel completely free with it, that, yeah, it's up to them. If they really wanted to become men of responsibility, they could put themselves into it. But when we get to the school year, it's going to be a little different. I don't really see them much over the summer. We're going to see each other every day. And I want to put the pressure on. Build our relationship to the point where I can keep pushing, and help them become the men that I know they can become. And men that will actually have overcome this learning obstacle of not being responsible. The one is a really interesting character, and he likes to draw pictures. And one of the pictures he put up on the board for responsibility, very personal. I mean, he's in tune with himself. He's in tune with the classroom. He's so bright that he just frustrates me. But his picture was a trash can and a stick figure him at his desk, and he chucks a piece of paper at the trash can, and of course it misses. And then he picks it up and puts it in. I'm like, wow, he really understands what responsibility is. But do you think he does that with the rest of his life? He'll do it in the classroom because I told him they're supposed to. So we do have that much relationship. But these people that leave a trail after them of just things like that, just it becomes an obstacle to learning because they miss so many things in life because they don't follow through. I yabbered enough. Anyone else have something that you're facing?
Mm-hmm. The same way. If I'm not fast enough, then I'm too slow and I don't know what to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's an obstacle because some things aren't learned fast.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll say a little bit more about that later because I really think that's a kind of a cultural problem. Okay. Well, maybe I'll just see if I can wake this thing up. I'm just going to put these down here just to give you a quick look at them. These three parts of our person. And you have all this in your notes. I gave it to you all wrote out because if we don't cover it, you can at least take a look at it and see if you can make sense out of it. But our physical anatomy is a very real part of our learning experience. It's factual. It's quantitative. Do you realize that how much you weigh affects your learning? It's not making a slam on anybody, but it does. There are certain things that you can do or can't do because of how much you weigh. All right? It's just becomes a part of you that affects your learning. It's like the hardware, and it is temporal. Those things will all be gone when you die. I praise the Lord for that. Our soul, and I like to think of it as the me that my anatomy expresses, like we all have pretty much the same anatomy, but now, and we look different, but we all walk different. We smile different. We just express ourselves differently. And sometimes if I can't really see a person road, but I see them walking, well, I'll know who it is. There's only one person that walks like that. Okay. And they walk that way, some because of their anatomy, but just because of some of the way they carry themselves. It's conceptual, interpretive, interactive. It's this mind, the will, and emotions that's on the chart. It's intangible, but it is visible. It's kind of like a display. Like what's on my screen. I can touch my screen, but I can't touch what's there. That's kind of how I picture the soul. And it's eternal. It lives after death, and it will face the judgment. And then our spirit. It's a thing inside of me that tells me what to do. It's the directional force in my life, or tells me what I'm doing. Okay, or maybe the why I'm doing it, the intent, the motive. It's a life-giving, qualitative part of a person. You can tell when people have lots of spirit. They're just alive, and you can tell people don't have much spirit. They're just sort of a living death. And that's eternal. It lives forever. And it's a thing about you that determines your eternal destiny, the sentence that you will have, depending on what kind of spirit you have. And I like to think of a converted person. I just put this one in here just because I like to think visually. That when we become a converted person, when God converts us from our fallen nature, our spirit becomes a part of us that is the active part of our life. And our body is in submission to that. And when we're not, it's the other way around. Physical challenges. And again, I'm going to go through these very rapidly. I think I ran over a page there. Let me get this one out so I can see that one. The soul is able to do things, but sometimes the body is not. And these can be structural dysfunctions, just things about a person. Like if you're missing an arm, there are things you will never be able to learn to do, or a leg. They can be sensory dysfunctions, not being able to see right or hear right. They affect your learning. And these all things are nerve dysfunctions. And an interesting one to me is some of the habits that we have physically can even affect learning. They're the closest things that are related to something else, but they are physical things that affect how we learn. whether you brush your teeth or not every morning? Have any idea that that could affect your learning? I really think it does. We don't often make those kind of connections. Your eating habits, I know they affect people's learning. Sometimes whether you had breakfast or not makes a difference. How much you had for breakfast, what you had for breakfast. Those habits, whether you drink pop all the time or milk, they are all things that affect our learning. Reflexes that you learn can affect learning. Those all have basic remedies. Some of them were, you know, you can put glasses, hearing aids, different things for sensory ones. And if you're missing parts, you just have to learn. I'm missing part of a finger. I lost that 2 days before school started in when I was 15. So I must have been like 10th grade. So I missed the first day of school. But it's on my left hand. I can still write. And so outside of it just being an annoyance and almost half embarrassment, it didn't really affect anything. But the next year, we're going to have typing. Stuck out like a sore thumb or two thumbs, if you want to call it that. When I found out, I was like, what am I going to do? So, I went to typing teacher and I said, I don't think I can learn to type. Can I go into Spanish class? Oh, he said, you can learn to type. And I was asked, how insensitive can he be? But we had a good relationship, so I didn't hold it against him. I thought, I guess I just have to do that. It was this John Martin I talked about before. So I learned to type. And do I ever thank God today that I learned to type? Now, I couldn't put my fingers like everybody else could. On this hand, I could. But in this one, these have to learn to curl up more. And maybe I have to use this one for an extra key or something. But he let me figure all that out. And I learned to type. And when I started teaching, I was really glad for that. Now, maybe I can never learn to type as fast as some people. But I can type reasonably fast and well. That has been a big blessing. But those kind of things we can overcome. Let me quickly go down through three things about our soul or that I think affect our learning much, and we'll maybe touch on these a little bit more. But the mind, like I said, is distinct from the brain. I read somewhere this statement that really helped me sort it out. Our brain can influence the mind, this physical part of us, but the mind uses the brain. It's like a tool that the mind has to then affect your physical body. It's kind of a link between the two. It gives us a gift of thinking. It's our way of thinking happens there. The emotions, I just learned this about the word emotion. It has Latin roots that mean to bring out movement. And I thought about that. Yeah, our emotions is actually what provides us with the incentive to move. Get a strong emotion, you will see it on the person somewhere. Okay? Sometimes it's dramatic. Sometimes it's just faint. And the will, which is our gift of choice. We choose how to live. Sometimes the body is able, but the soul is not. Again, I jumped over that. But our thinking patterns with our mind affect our learning. And sometimes it's very important that you find out how your student is thinking through a problem. Because there might be something in there that they've developed or even been taught at home that keeps them from really getting it. And once you find that, you can help them learn what that is. I had a homeschooler mom tell me this one. She was teaching her child some math, and they went to borrow. This actually might come in on another one a little better, but suddenly there was a problem because they hadn't been taught that you're not to borrow. Here they're doing it in math. Okay. Well, there was a way of thinking that was going to cause a problem. So that was easy to fix. Maybe just call it something else, okay? Or tell them this kind's okay. Our emotions, the way we respond. I told you about that one teacher I had. If I had to face another teacher like that, my emotional response would be an obstacle that I would have to face. And hopefully the teacher would be sensitive enough to realize there's something here that we're going to have to work through. It really didn't have anything to do with the books. It was just something that had become a part of the way I thought about a certain type of person that I'm going to have to overcome. And you can help your students overcome those kinds of things. Emotions are kind of like presets. When you get angry, there's a set of things that goes with it. And if those are triggered, a teacher should be sensitive. When you see a student expressing emotion about something, it's going to be very helpful to identify what triggered that, because then there's a whole series of actions that come out of it. road rage is one that you often hear about, where something happened on the road and a person just gets angry and they do crazy stuff. Phobias will be some of those. Associations that make deep impressions on us will be a lasting emotional memory that can be a problem. And I'll let you look over this list, some emotions or some things that can trigger an emotion and some of the physical things that can come out of that. I'll just let you look over those. The will. This one's a powerful one. Every emotion, I tend to think this way. Again, I'm not going to call this gospel truth. But every emotion that is triggered either can be captured by the will and brought into control and produce controlled action, or it can be left to its default responses, like in road rage. Most of the people that do that kind of stuff afterwards, probably especially when they see their car or maybe whatever came out of it, it's like, whatever. And I've heard of people talk about things happen, and when it's over, they're like embarrassed. It's almost like getting drunk. They're not drunk, but they are drunk with anger. But when I was at boys camp, that was a problem with the boys there. We called them emotionally handicapped. I think they use more politically correct words right now. But their problem in life was they had never learned to capture their emotion and bring it in control. They just went with it. And at camp, that was our job, was to teach them to learn how to handle their emotions. Sometimes you have to do that with students in school, not to that extreme. But their response to things, they need to learn to use that gift of the will that God gave them. Will provides stability of purpose. It can be for good or for bad. And it is guided by the goals that we have for ourselves and the convictions that we learn. And it produces a drive. And I'm going to have to wrap this up here. The spirit one, I think, is very important. The spirit, which is our life, physical life survives for survival's sake. Spiritual life is the energy and power to give myself to a universal cause. And if we can help our students sense that life is more than just what happens in their body, that will put them in a position where they can learn things a lot deeper. The stories that you read will take on deeper meaning. They can connect some things. And there are some other things that I put in there that I won't take time to go over either. But the things that we have to deal with in life ultimately are spiritual things. Everything else about us, our emotions and our body, if we want to learn the truths about life, we need to have the spirit in its right. We need to have the right spirit, really. And I want to mention this, morals and conscience. The students that come to you already, especially if you're a high school teacher, but even in elementary, already have a set of morals and a conscience and maybe even some convictions that have been established at home. And it is important that you connect with those, or else you may find yourself working against something. Things can backfire that wouldn't have to if you maybe just watch a little bit, figure out what's going on, something that you can, it's kind of like Melvin talked about, teaming up with the parents, probably in this case, to work with some things that you see are causing problems in the school. Just morals are kind of the right and wrong way to treat people. I'll put it with that, because some students come to school and their morals about treating people are not all that good. And conscience, it's kind of an idiot light that we have that tells us when we did right and wrong. And that can be messed with. Some children don't have very much conscience. Some have too much. And learning how to respond to that. Well, I'm going to stop there. There's some things at the end that I guess I'll let you look over. But I hope that what I gave you here gives you sort of a framework to know how you can relate to your students in a way that connects with the person. The most frustrating thing about teaching is if I cannot figure out what's going on inside my student. Because I don't know where to go. I really don't know what to do next. Sometimes I have to do something to find out. And I think it's important that we're cautious when we're in that place, because sometimes you can do the wrong thing and have a lot of stuff to undo to get back on track. But take the time to learn to know your students. And for me, it has often been learning to know myself and using that ability to be honest with myself, then I can be honest with my students. Let's just stop for a word of prayer. It's kind of an abrupt ending, but hopefully God can take something here and help you grow. God, again, I want to thank you for the privilege that you've given each one of us and for the calling that you give each one of us to teach young people. It's such a special opportunity with special challenges. And Lord, as we've thought about learning obstacles being connected to relationships, help us to be sensitive about our relationships with our students and use them as a powerful tool to help our students learn the things that we want to teach them, but most of all, learn how to approach life with a mind that's equipped with the tools to learn what you are teaching them. In Jesus' name, amen.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.